Hi, this is Dr. Stephanie Wigner, your podcast host. I'm a speaker, a chiropractor, a business coach, and a multiple seven-figure entrepreneur. I'm committed to helping wellness practitioners just like you build the business and the life of their dreams. Together, we'll dive into increasing profit, hiring the right team, and buying back your time so that your life can begin to prosper. Learn how I'm increasing my wealth and building a legacy without sacrificing those that I'm building it for. This is the Wealthy Practitioner Podcast. Thank you guys for joining me for another episode of the Wealthy Practitioner Podcast. Today, I am interviewing one of my mentors, Taylor Welch, and I am so excited for him to be with us today because he is honestly one of the smartest people I know, one of the best entrepreneurs, and I think all of you guys could learn a lot from him. I know I have since I've entered his world, and I'm going to have him chat a little bit about some of the topics he's taught me, as well as this idea of bulletproofing your business and how you could become unfuckable with, essentially. So Taylor, thank you for joining us today. I'm so excited you're here.
It's amazing to be here. And I guess we should all hope to be unfuckwithable. That should be the goal for everyone.
Exactly. So I just wanted to share a little bit about how I came across Taylor. My husband, Kyle, and I were looking at buying investment properties, kind of turnkey, done for you. No time, obviously busy chiropractors building our clinics. And we were like, cool, we want our money to work for us. So I originally came across Taylor because he had an insane real estate portfolio and he was selling some of his long-term rentals. I bought one. Had no idea that he was this amazing consultant, world-class, known internationally, until I got into his world and started just studying you and learning you and being obsessed with the things you were posting and your podcast and things like that. So can you talk about your journey into entrepreneurship?
Yep. I grew up wanting to be a pastor, so I got a job at a church. I realized that as soon as I got married, I did not make enough money at the job that I was at to live, really. My wife was actually the sugar mama. She made way more money than I did. And this is kind of funny, but I remember one story where she got me a, do you remember the store Express, like the clothing store?
Yes. Still
like
exists.
I was obsessed. Yeah. I mean, I was obsessed with Express, but I couldn't afford it. And so she got me an Express hoodie 1 year. I was like, how did you afford this? And she's like, I just bought it. And it was that moment I was like, oh, I am poor and she is not. This is before we were married. But it was funny because it made me super insecure because it was like, you know, this is like the cultural, societal expectation is like the guy to be the one that provides. And I was like, I'm never going to catch my wife, essentially. She has such a head start. We got married. We went through the experience of like working at the church. She actually relocated. And so she went from being what I thought was wealthy to having to start up her business. I was like, I have to figure something else out. So I moved on from that job into real estate. At the real estate job, my secret to advancement was just saying yes to everything. You're like, do you know how to do this? Yes. And I would figure it out. Do you know how to do this? Yep. And I would figure it out. And, you know, like for a while, I didn't really sleep. Because I was basically signing up to do things that I had no idea how to do. One of those things was marketing. And they're like, do you know how to market? I'm like, of course. Doesn't everyone know how to market? And they're like, no. I was like, okay, well, I know how to do it. And like started reading books on it and started going through the motions of learning how to code. Because at that point, I was like, marketing is just making websites, right? Mm-hmm. That's all that it is. And I was so silly because I didn't know anything about it. So I got good at it and I got good, so good at it, in fact, that I started seeing clients outside of the normal day job. My boss knew this and was fine with it as long as it didn't come into work territory. But he also knew that I was probably going to leave. And so he said, what do you need to stay? Like, what do we need to do to keep you here? I said, there's nothing you can do to keep me here. There's zero chance I'm staying here because I had tasted like I can make my own income.
You know,
work harder and make more money. This is to a kid who worked at a church. I was like, this is unbelievable because I've been poor for so long that just being able to work 70 hours and make more money than if you work 40 hours, like this is the life. This is absolute control. I'm basically rich just because I can control it. Moved on from that. And I just started doing things and I failed a lot. I remember one person in particular, his name was Bradley. And he was like, can we do this campaign? I said, of course, we will crush this campaign. And it was the worst piece of marketing that he had ever sent. I think I hold the record for like the lowest click-through rate lowest open rate and lowest number of sales that he's ever done to his list. And I was horrified. I mean, I was like, I just quit my job. I'm going to go bankrupt because now I don't even know how to do marketing. And Bradley was actually like one of the significant catalysts for me because he was an entrepreneur and he had been an entrepreneur his whole life. And he saw something in me. He's like, I want to put you on retainer. I was like, why would you want to put me on retainer? I just ruined your list. He said, I don't know. I'm just going off of a hunch. And in hindsight, what we've talked about, what Bradley saw is he saw this like indomitable type of really rebellious, stubborn spirit. Like I wouldn't lose more than once in the same area. And so he just said, I had a hunch and I just wanted to get you involved in the business. And every other campaign we did worked because I learned from my mistakes. And just kind of stair stepped from there up and up and up and up and up. But the secret is I kept saying yes. I just, you know, I was just obsessed with learning new things and becoming smarter than I was the day before. And so it's not a very specific answer, but that's kind of like the grassroots founding answer. And I did, by the way, I remember the day that my income passed my wife's income. And you know, we have our accounts together and everything. But I was like, hey, we're going out because I've made it. And this is a day of celebration because I'm no longer poor and I can actually provide for my family. And she's like, what are you talking about? Nobody cares. Like, let's go to dinner. But it wasn't a thing to her. It was just a thing to me. And since then, you know, we make jokes about it and all of the stuff. But
well, I think that's one of the things I love about your story is that you guys have like kind of been on the grind and the come up together, very similar to Kyle and I. You know, we started from nothing and it's like everything we've done is building upon, you know, our foundation and that sort of thing. But I think you bring up such a good point because you were like, I just went and learned a new skill set. And, you know, a lot of my audience is doctors. And so they've went to school for a really long time to learn how to actually take care of patients, but they don't necessarily have skill sets in other realms, business particular. Marketing, definitely not. You know, they're looking for other things to help grow their business, but it's not always necessarily super easy. And I think it's just a great reminder, like you should always be a student. You should always be learning new skill sets because the more skill sets you have in your tool belt, the more freedom you have, essentially.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know if you've read this book called The Psycho-Cybernetics.
I have not.
So it's Dr. Maxwell Maltz, who is a plastic surgeon who got into mindset and realized that people's identity actually had nothing to do with the way they looked. The way they looked was more of a byproduct of that because he would fix people in certain areas and they would still carry insecurity and shame. It's a really good book. And then there's also another book called Just Mindset, which talks about the plasticity of the mind. Mm-hmm. And when I read that many years ago, I realized that I could change my mind. Not change my mind as like change my opinion, but I could change the way my mind worked because it talks about building pathways in the brain and writing neural pathways. And so I hated reading and I hated studying and I hated all of it as a kid. I was your quintessential, like, I don't even need to show up to school. I'm smart enough to just get some, but I don't care why I get B's or A's because it's work. You know, I'd rather play music and goof around. So, you know, my GPA in high school was like a 2.4. I just didn't care.
Yeah.
And when I read this book called Mindset, I was like, you know, I care now because I've now seen like your ability to earn money is based on the skill sets you can acquire in life. And I remember specifically being like, what are the things I need to eliminate that I actually really like to do right now that aren't making me more money? Watching TV was one of them. Goofing around on the weekends was one of them. Like I just was, you know, so obsessed around one thing. So I literally just went in and I began to delete that part of my brain that enjoyed watching TV. And to this day, and it sounds like I'm a crazy person, but to this day, like I'll get a Saturday off every couple of, you know, months where the kids are gone. Maybe my wife has taken them to Alabama and I'll just have like nothing to do. And I'll sit down and I'll like watch a show like Game of Thrones or something. And 20 minutes in, I just can't do it. And I'm just like, I am
bored.
I don't even want to do this. Like I just turn it off. And it's like, there's that piece of my brain that was written on purpose because I was wasting so much time. And now it's like, it's not that I can't have fun. It's just like, if I'm going to have fun, I need to be getting better. In the process. So I go play basketball or go to the gym or sit down and read a book. But I almost can't watch TV anymore because of that season of my life that I undid.
Yeah, that you programmed yourself that that wasn't serving you, right?
Yep.
I think that, you know, one of the recent podcasts that I listened to, you were talking about this concept kind of social media and how it's outpacing our ability to evolve and our ability to regulate our emotions. And when I listen to TV, I kind of think of that same thing, right? Social media is just an accelerated version of television. And yep. It's programming our thoughts and our the way that we view things through a completely different lens. And one of the ideas is like, we're unable to fail or process our failures, I think you said, because social media is just telling us like we should compare ourselves to everybody else. And instead of processing that failure and becoming better because you've actually taken the lessons and have extracted the data that you need from that failure, you're just constantly in this spinning motion comparing yourself to others on social.
Yeah. And it's destructive in that it really teaches you to be unhappy. I don't know if we talked about that on the podcast or even in London, but there's like, you know, money is energy. That's really money is just kind of like it's a bit of an energy. It's like people get so hung up on like, how do I make more money? How do I get more clients? But think about your ability to go put the gasoline in your vehicle is not really constrained by anything. And so therefore we don't really worry about it. And because we don't worry about it, there's no suppression involved. So the emotion around, this is such a silly example. People crack up in life. They're like, you're comparing money to fuel and gasoline, but it sort of is.
Yeah.
And when we get so emotionally invested into something, we actually suppress our ability to regulate the feelings that are around us. So like when social media came up, we have advantages that came from that, but our happiness is really the differential between what we have and what we want. That's it. So you want the simplest, most baseline version of, are you happy? How closely does your life match what you want your life to be? And that's your rate of happiness. What social media does is it actually, and we talked about mimetic desire, which is the cloning of wants from other people. What social media does is it comes in and it hacks the not what you have, it hacks what you want. And so the further away what you want becomes from what you have, the more unhappy you are. And when you're unhappy, you have less energy. And everything in the body actually is suppressed through unhappiness. I think I read a quote by, do you know Dr. DeMartini?
Yeah.
So I think it was Dr. John DeMartini. He basically said like every single thing that the human being does, every single thing is from a desire to become happy or a feeling that you get from that thing. And I haven't been able to disprove that. And it's where the hedonic treadmill comes in and everything really that is both good and bad comes from we're chasing a feeling that we want to feel like we've made it or to feel like we're better or to feel happier or to feel safer. And when people aren't aware of these things, they can't respond to them. And social media, better than anything else, it has the ability to go change the desires that you have without you knowing that it's changing your desires because it uses mimetics.
Totally. And all of a sudden you want a Lamborghini and you're like, but wait, I don't even want to drive a Lamborghini, but social media has convinced me I need one.
Yeah. This person has success and therefore my rating of success now is, do I have a Lamborghini? Because he has or she has a Lamborghini. It's so unhealthy. So when I was studying Abraham Lincoln for Arena, I had this realization where I was like, I don't actually want to be Abraham Lincoln at all. like his life was just awful.
Yeah.
He had the worst life ever. Worse than Churchill, worse than Roosevelt. Maybe not worse than like you get into like Viktor Frankl and it's like, okay, well, there are people that are worse, but maybe like the dude was like losing kids, losing wives, losing girlfriends, losing elections, depressed, suicidal. And when we think about these people that have experience failure at such a high level, oftentimes we want to clone the outcomes, but we don't want to clone the price they paid for the outcome. And social media deletes the price. It literally just goes in and shows you, here's what this person did, but it shows you nothing of the payments that they made. There's no receipts. There's no food. You don't get to have, like, I'm very open, but most people are not. And so I'll sit in a room with you and I'll be like, yeah, I was depressed for six months trying to build this. And I think when I say that, people are like, wait, what?
Well, one of the most, I think, eye-opening and just impactful, I still think about it, was probably over a year ago, one of our coaching calls is where you shared, guys, you think I'm just out here crushing it. Like, do you want to peek behind the curtain and see what realistically the last 30 days have looked like. And you shared all of the trials and tribulations that you faced and some of the hardships and challenges. And I was just like, holy shit, I'm over here complaining because I don't know what a VSL is. You know, I feel like this is the hardest thing ever. And you really have to strengthen that muscle of facing obstacles and challenges and overcoming them, learning from them and that sort of thing. But that's one of the things I love about you and that I try to do with my clients too is, guys, sure, this is an overnight success that took 7 years, but also here's all of the stuff I deal with on a daily basis that you might not realize because my social, even though I try to be open and honest, isn't showing. I'm not just going to get on there and cry on social media, you know? But that was super eye-opening for me when you just like pulled back the curtain and you were like, yeah, this sucks right now.
Yeah. And that happens all the time. I think if it doesn't happen periodically, you know, you might just be coasting or hanging out. When you think of going from plateau to plateau to plateau, like everyone sees the top of that mountain, but you get the shit beat out of you in the valley. Like you, it's dark and you can't see anything and you've never been there before. And so I think the best of the best are just figuring it out as they go and they learn principles and rules. But the reality is that nobody really knows anything. We're making educated guesses along the way, and sometimes we're wrong. And when you're wrong, it hurts.
Yeah, definitely. And I heard you make a point one time that said, you know, when you get ready to climb that new mountain, there's a new monster that shows up, right? And it's forcing you to decide, do you really want it or not? And that's been a topic for Kyle and I lately. As we scaled from 3 clinics to 4 in the last 12, 15 months, it's like, damn, did we really want that 4th clinic? Because it's been nothing but headache after headache, different issues popping up. And it's really forcing us, like, that future version of yourself wants 10 clinics. Are you willing to become the person right now that has 10 clinics? And I just think that a lot of times the answer is no, you're not willing to do what it takes. And then you go into that pattern of like, oh, I'm the victim, poor me, I'm a failure, versus realizing some of the things that you've just tried are failures.
Yeah, the monster thing is really interesting because we're actually a byproduct of the monster. And everyone wants to think that we are, the hero is the byproduct of their virtues or their character or their strength. But the hero, if you study history, the hero is actually more of a byproduct of the situation. The situation demands the hero to become a hero. Nobody's a hero before the situation. They're just hidden. We have heroes walking around all of the time who are not exposed as heroes yet because they have not been threatened. And so when you actually want to see, like, when did Theodore Roosevelt become Roosevelt? When did Victor become Victor? When did Harriet Tubman become who she was? When were they acknowledged as heroes? It's when they almost died, but didn't. We're actually created by our monsters. And I think people have that the wrong way. Like, they think that the greatest among us were just born that way, or they worked out really hard, or they tried it. The greatest among us actually had to be chiseled through really terrifying circumstances, and that's how heroes are born. It's very important, and people want to avoid the monster, and in avoiding the monster, they avoid the very thing that would have created that heroism in their life, you know?
You just blew my mind. You just blew my mind. That I haven't heard it explained that way before, but it's so true. It's so true. I want all the listeners to just hear that, process it, rewind it, replay it again, because our adversities truly get us into that future version of ourselves. And you teach a lot on that, becoming that future version. And for you, can you just share about envisioning that future version of yourself, how that's helped you through some of these monsters and the adversities that you faced?
Yeah, I'm going to give you like a real story that was recent that's like super close to home. So my wife, my son, and my daughter, we just went to vacation for a week in Florida. This was in the middle of August. So Harrison was born in February, so he's 6 months old. Kate's quick to remind everyone, she's not 4, she's 4.5. That half a year really matters. We haven't had a vacation as a family in about a year just because it's been so crazy. Mm-hmm. And so we go on vacation and I'm like, you know, this is going to be amazing. I'm going to get some time off. We're going to go to the beach. I'm going to read so many books. You have all these goals. I'm going to read 12 books. Then you get none of it done on vacation, because there's kids running around and Kate's trying to set things on fire that shouldn't be set on fire. And it's just chaos nonstop. And the first day that we're there, I'm so excited to sit down and come up with vision because I haven't been able to think. Mm-hmm. So this, for me, it's like when you sit down and you create goals, it's like so motivating and invigorating. And I sit down with a cup of coffee And it's the black hole. I have no vision. I don't want anything. I don't care about anything. And I'm literally like, I'm having a freak out moment because I'm like, you know, what if I have burned myself out and there's no coming back from this? And what if I'm just slowly going to deteriorate because I can't even set a vision? And I've got a team that's depending on me and clients that depend on me. I have to have vision. And I'm having this conversation in my head like, this is not okay.
You're the visionary.
Exactly. Like something's broken and I don't know if I can fix it. And my wife, typical to her, and kind of she just sees things that I don't always see. She's like, well, you probably just need to rest for a couple of days and your vision will come back. And I'm like, I don't think that's it. I think I need to figure this out today or else I'm going to waste the vacation. But I end up taking a couple of days to just kind of rest. And it's a scary couple of days for me because you have to think about like, this is the one thing that I know that I'm good at, which is coming up with ideas. And I feel like I'm losing that. And I go back to the same coffee shop and Lindsay says, you should write a letter to yourself from the future. And I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. That sounds like something I would come up with. Like, let's sure, let's do that. You know, because I'm like the future self guy. And so I sit down and I write a letter to myself from the future. And it's the most kind, reassuring, everything's going to be okay. It's 2025. And I know you don't want to hear this now, but you're going to lose these moments with your kids if you don't just disconnect and enjoy them. It's the most just life-giving letter that I could. And I just kind of got into flow and wrote this letter. And all of a sudden, the pressure came off and I was released from it because I knew it was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And like when you think about a time in your history when it's been really awful and challenging and you weren't sure in the moment if you were going to make it. Well, the current version of yourself, you can tell that you obviously made it. And you probably freaked out about things you shouldn't have freaked out about. And if you go back to that version of yourself, what would you tell them? You would say, look, it's all going to be fine. Hey, look, just enjoy this moment because it doesn't feel like it now, but you're going to have fond memories when you look back. We can do the same thing to our current selves. There's a version of ourselves in the future that has made it, that has beat it, that is beyond it. What would that person, if they were coming back in time to 2023, September 19th, what would they say to me right now? And it's amazing how that exercise literally is like a fascinating experiment in just learning how to chill out. And when I get into that future mode, I have all of the things that I want to have. I'm friends with the people I want to be friends with. My family is healthy and happy. And nobody died. I didn't die. So really, what am I so worried about right now? When you tap into that energy, it just gives you the resilience you need to just not quit in the middle. We hurt ourselves more by our reactions to circumstances than the circumstances could ever hurt us. So most of our failure is self-inflicted. We actually abort our own vision because we're afraid of a circumstance. The circumstance can't abort your mission. Like you can't, the circumstance can't do as much bad stuff to you as you're going to do to yourself through this myopic, narrow viewpoint of success or failure. And so that was a big lesson for me. And it was only like a month ago. So I'm still learning. Awesome.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love so much that you share how you're applying all of these concepts you teach about to your everyday life because you're young as shit and you're still building your businesses. You have so much opportunities in front of you and you have a lot of responsibility as you have a huge team, you have a huge client list. And sometimes I think it's a great reminder that even those great people at the top are getting overwhelmed and facing some of the same hurdles that we are.
Yep, 100%.
When you face a failure, one of the things that you had pointed out to me was that you try to extract data from it. And you had said, okay, this happened. How did this happen? Why did this happen? What is the data showing us and what is preferable? Can you just talk a little bit about when you use that framework? Is it after, you know, you launched that campaign that you talked about in your early entrepreneur days, you launched that campaign and you're like, okay, why didn't it work? How did this happen? And what's a preferable solution? How often are you working through that framework in your own business?
I try to work through it after every significant moment, whether it's a failure or a win. Well, I'm trying to rewire even this now. The same way that I rewired television is I don't want my feeling to come from success or failure. I don't want it to come from winning or losing. I want my feeling of positivity to come from, did I get smarter or did I get better? Mm-hmm. Which requires the data to be extracted. It also requires the meaning to kind of be properly placed onto the situation. So I'll give you an example. One of the businesses, we have really good marketing and really good numbers on the front end. But there's something, there's like a glitch somewhere between the marketing and the sales team. And there's a lack of communication. If marketing teams are not careful, what's beginning to happen is they're beginning to derive their, am I doing a good job or a bad job, based on long tail events that have nothing to do with them. So the salespeople or like client retention, which really is not a marketing KPI. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really, really, really hitting this over the head with this team over and over again. Like, your success or failure has nothing to do with that team. It has everything to do with your particular department. Are you getting better numbers? Are you extracting better lessons? Are you releasing better products? But if you take that, which is just a departmental viewpoint, and you apply it to life, we tend to rate a decision being good or bad based on what happened. And this is a massive, massive vulnerability, because you can make the right decision, and because something crazy like COVID happened,
yeah,
you have bad outcomes based on a good decision. And what people do, and this is why it's so hard for folks, is they will then learn the wrong lesson from the decision, which it was the wrong decision. That's the lesson they learned. And so when COVID goes away and the black swan is gone and all the anomalies are back down to nothing, what do? They make the opposite decision, and then a bad outcome happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so they remove the law of averages because they're constantly changing their decisions. And what I want to do is, I don't want my quality of decision rating to come from the outcome. I want it to come from, how did I make the decision? Did I make the right decision? Did I operate according to a playbook or to a set of rules? And whether you're investing money, whether you're hiring people, whether you're launching a new business, there are dependable rules that govern the randomness of life, but nothing removes the randomness. So this is like one of the big things you learn in money and finance. It's random all of the time, and it's never not random. Mm-hmm. However, there are rules that if you can just play the same way according to the rules, then statistics say that you're going to be on top more than you're on bottom. But it's the same thing with the human body. It's the same thing with, you know, when somebody gets sick. It's like, well, the body does this most of the time, but then some of the times it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's just a statistical probability. We do this with medicine. We do this with supplementation. But when people determine or derive goodness or badness based on the outcome, they lose their playbook. And I've tried to suppress that a lot. And so my process is just doing postmortems and looking at, if I had no idea how the outcome was going to play out, would I have made the same decision based on what I know now? And if the answer is yeah, I would make the same decision, the numbers will play the same way the next time. And it's crazy how the number is always correct.
Yeah. I love that. I'm just thinking of our own situations, how we have had a lot of growing pains going from 3 to 4 clinics. And when we opened that fourth clinic, it was like, we have a process, we have a playbook, we know how to open these clinics and get them super profitable within 6 months. And then a ton of variables outside of our control came and fucked it all up. Yep, and, yep. You know, now the question is played, like, do we really want those 10 clinics that we talked about? And our egos and our feelings currently in this given moment are saying, no, it's okay, just stay small. But it's like, well, we're extracting the wrong data from that, right? We're saying, like, nothing was wrong with the playbook. The variables that we had no control over is what had caused some of this to default or have more challenges than we anticipated. And so I love that. I think all of our listeners could apply that you have to be extracting the right data unattached from the outcome. I just wanted to shout out here before we leave, you have an amazing podcast, The Good Life, that I listen to every week. And can you just share with the listeners a little bit about what you're currently doing and what's next for you and how they can connect with you? I know I personally have shared with a lot of my friends who are wanting to diversify into consulting, just even the memos, because I think while they're designed for consulting businesses, they're so applicable to all businesses because you share a lot of your life lessons. So just share with everybody a little bit about that.
Yeah. So The Wealthy Consultant is probably one of the biggest projects that we're running at the moment. And I think it's bigger than just consultants as well. It's like when I was thinking about, so last summer when I was just sitting down to think through, like, what do I want my legacy to be? What I want to do? Because I kind of hit a point where, now, the money, I can make money, whatever, doing whatever. Like, I could write books. Yeah. I could take 3 one-on-one clients a year and be fine. Like, I could do nothing. I was like, I don't have any mission anymore, because I've sort of like gotten to a place where, you know, my mission's outdated. And one of the things that I came to a conclusion on is, you know, education is kind of like the evolutionary slipstream for like the human race. Like, when we as humans developed the ability to write, there was like shared language and communication. I'm a nerd. I'm going to answer this question in a really weird way. But I listened to like, there's this thing called the Great Courses. And I listened to 30 hours of somebody talk about the history of Egypt and Egyptian civilization and Egyptology. And I'm like, oh, my wife is like, why are you listening to this? I'm like, I don't know, but I am obsessed with Egypt right now. And when we found the Rosetta Stone and we cracked the Egyptian language, it unlocked a whole world that we had no idea even existed. And so the Egyptians were well-versed in commerce and like, you know, architecture in it, but we didn't know that because we didn't know how to crack the language. So mm-hmm. when we figured out how to write and how to communicate, education was born. And now when you see lifespans are longer and civilization's happier, I know people are like, oh, the world's in such a dangerous place. You know, the world's never been safer or people have never lived longer. Like we're in the best place in the history of civilization. Mm-hmm. And what is that? Because it's education. You can go to school, you can get a degree, you can learn this and that, and you can learn these things. I want to be a part of that. Like I want to be a part of taking people who have this incredible expertise, but they have no idea how to break that expertise out of the traditional box of corporate America or, you know, working a job for someone else. And so I was like, we're going to build training companies because if we can equip the trainers and the educators and the teachers and the consultants and coaches, then we basically have a non-linear impact on the future of the world because we can actually lead the leaders, which is multiplicative and it has compounding. And so the wealthy consultant is about taking people's expertise and putting it in a non-traditional box that can pay them while they pay the world through their expertise. And so it's a two-way transference where money comes into the expert and expertise goes out into the market. And so the memo is like just one of the ways that we equip those people to think, because there's a different way of thinking. You know, it's like when you work at a job, you have one way of thinking. And when you work for yourself, it's a totally different way of thinking. You have to think about everything different.
Yep.
And so it starts there. We just fix the thinking. And then we have, Launch Kit, which is basically how do you actually take this expertise that you have and put it into a blueprint that can actually make money. And then there's the membership community, which you're a part of on the back end, which is all these events and crazy stuff. And then there's also another cool project that I think you're a part of as well as Arena. Arena's, we have a faculty now where we go through and we study. Like right now, my team has read everything that exists on Viktor Frankl. Everything. Like every single thing that he wrote, everything that was written about him, because we're doing a series on the search for purpose, which is such a huge thing. Like, how do you find your purpose? And Viktor nailed it when he came to his conclusion. Logotherapy, as he called it, which is like finding and driving meaning through struggle and through the growing. But we've done Abraham Lincoln and Winston Churchill and Frederick Douglass. And it's just amazing how like when you take these people's lessons, like I want to take this into schools because like my daughter, I dropped her off this morning for school and we were talking about Winston Churchill and standing up for what you believe in. She has no idea who Winston Churchill is. No idea. She just thinks it's a funny word. But when you start young, it's like, I want to program people at a young age. Like, you know, you can lead yourself and through leading yourself, you can lead other people. And nobody was able to win over their enemies like Abraham Lincoln. Nobody was able to survive and be resilient like Winston Churchill. Nobody was able to actually respond to situational fatigue like Theodore Roosevelt. Nobody was able to deal with very unfair circumstances in an empowering way like Frederick Douglass. These people have lessons that we can tap into. And so that's something that's a lot cheaper, but I want to get it into the school. So people can like just look me up online. And I mean, I've got all the socials. The Good Life is a great podcast. The team just takes everything. Like this, we'll probably post this on the Good Life too, send it back to your side and get you some traffic. But I'm doing a little bit of everything.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I definitely wanted to mention just all the things that you're doing, because I think it's so much bigger than I, like I said, other than consulting. And after listening to you and even hearing some of that vision, it's amazing. I also am for empowering my son, you know, being chiropractors, both of his parents. It's like, hey, your body has the ability to heal itself. You need to learn how to take care of your body at a young age. But also with that entrepreneurship, you know, people look at me like I'm crazy when I say I don't really care if my son goes to college. I'm like, I want him to learn. And if he wants to be an entrepreneur from the gate, awesome. If he wants to go to college, awesome. But he needs to know that he can lead himself and make those decisions. So I love that you mentioned that too. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your expertise with us. I am so, so grateful. And I hope to see you in Nashville soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Wealthy Practitioner Podcast. If you liked what I shared with you today, please rate the show and share it with your friends on social media. To connect with other practitioners just like you, join our exclusive Facebook group, The Wealthy Wellness Practitioner, where we continue the conversation about building profitable businesses. See you next week.